Our conflicts are the perfect scenarios for change and liberation to occur. Everything that's happening outside of you, it's pointing at something that's happening within you. Whenever things go wrong or where conflict arises, the blame game begins, particularly between two people. And the blame game, it's a game of the ego. He who blames you is trying to control you and is trying to manipulate you. But what's really happening in reality, the other person is reflecting back at you an aspect within you that without them, you wouldn't be able to see. Your perception is just an interpretation. But what is an interpretation? And what is your interpretation rooted in? Right? Like we talked in episode 1, there was the rhino painting, the sunset, a tree, the beach. But in front of every scenario that he painted, there was a rhino horn, because you're seeing the world through your lenses. So your interpretation is rooted in your beliefs, your association, your upbringing. The conflict that you could be experiencing currently with a partner, boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, your children, a boss, a coworker, a friend, is just an experience that you're needing to have so you can work through and process through that internal conflict, as without, so within, as within, so without. For what purpose? So that you can grow, so you can evolve, so you can transcend. Things are neither good nor bad, they just are. Perfectly imperfect, just as they are. But what are they really? They're just opportunities to create a higher consciousness within you. So again, so you can transcend. For change to occur within you, you have to change your perception of things. When you change the way you look at things, those very same things you're looking at change. But for that to change, you have to change the way you think, your perception, your mindset have to change. And when you change your consciousness, you change the information within you. You change your programming. So I have a challenge for you. Do you believe that the ego is the master, or is it a student? Do you believe that the ego is all that you are? And that's the premise for today's conversation in episode 2.
You're listening to Bridge Theory. I'm your host, Angel Santiago.
And I'm Nick Mary.
A podcast intended to bring together different ideas, different people, and hopefully find a place where it all meets in the middle.
And now, let's take it to the bridge.
So there is a teaching that says, you know, the ego is a great student, but a poor master. You know, and when you think about it, what is the ego? I see the ego as really your personality. The name of my ego is called Angel. And I think that without the ego, you couldn't even brush your teeth. The ego is like the operating system of a computer. You know, it has to exist for the computer to function. But how much of it do you need? You know, like the ego is like, for me, it's like when I look at a wild horse. Like a wild horse, if you leave it in the wild, it'll run, and you bring it into this apartment or into the studio that we're in, it'll probably destroy the place. But if you tame it, if you train it, you could really use it and be really helpful to you. It'll get you places much faster than if you walked. You could say, like, there's spiritual teachers that say, transcend the ego and leave it all behind. I don't know if that's really something I want to do. I think I need part of my ego. I think it's necessary. I don't want to be identified by it or controlled by it, but I could use it. Again, we're going back to the idea that the ego is a great student, but a poor master.
And what exactly does that mean, that ego is a student?
Well, it shouldn't be in charge. It should take orders from somewhere. Like, if we go back to the idea of, like, do you consider yourself to be a human being having or looking for moments of spirituality or spiritual awakenings? Or do you consider yourself to be a spiritual being having a temporary human experience or having a temporary human awakening? Because wherever you land on that, it's going to determine what kind of life experience you're going to have. So Are my actions and my choices dictated just through what my ego says? Or are they being dictated by some kind of divine, spiritual, moral, or ethical guidance? Or is it just purely ego?
Do you think when you say that you need your ego to brush your teeth? Because I think you need your ego to play to be a musician who plays in front of 10,000 people. You need your ego when you post a selfie on your Instagram and you get 5,000 likes on it. Those are ego driven in a way.
In a way.
You've created something, you've made something, and you're presenting it to an audience, and you're doing it hopefully at a level that gains some kind of response. But people don't think about ego as something that makes you have to brush your teeth. And, you know, do you think that is because you need an ego to get out of bed, to want you to function in society normally? Or is ego something that's less driven by fitting in and excelling socially?
Well, are we talking about being egotistical? Are we talking about being conceited?
I think that I do. I think that I do bundle those together.
I would say, you know, as we were kind of having a conversation about this episode, you mentioned something. You said a beautiful metaphor for ego. Can you go into that really quick?
I think that ego is like medicine, in that the right amount will keep you alive, and too much of it is poison.
So there it is. If you're thinking about egotistical conceitedness, that's the too much medicine, because it'll be like poison. But I think there is a certain element of ego that is necessary to exist. Like, if we go back to saying ego, you need the ego to brush your teeth. It's the operating system where this programming was able to install in you, so that you, like you said earlier, so you can function in society.
It's interesting, because that actually opens the door to me having to re-examine what I think of as ego, because I am so quick, and a lot of people are so quick, especially in today's kind of social media-driven society, to couple the concept of ego with a negative thing.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Not as a base, fundamental operating system. Where can you try to explain the difference, so that anyone listening could possibly start to contemplate it, and even myself, like, I want to think about how it could be seen on a bigger level.
So you and I have to exist in this world. You and I have to go to work. You and I have to drive. You and I have to maintain a schedule, right? Ego is like the persona, or like the avatar, that can help you do that. I'm sure you've seen it in movies where people go into like virtual reality, and they create an avatar so that they can function within that reality. Or take the movie with the blue people.
Avatar.
Avatar, yeah, movie with the blue people. He was in a wheelchair. The soldier was in a wheelchair, and he goes into this machine, and his eyes do the whole REM cycle thing, and like, he goes into, his consciousness gets transferred into this blue indigenous tall body, so he can function in that society. It's no different with us. You know, going back to that question, are you a human being having a spiritual awakening, or are you a spiritual being having a human awakening, right? So, like, here is this, my truth, my essence, attaching itself to this body to have this really virtual reality experience that we call life, right? So if I go and post a selfie, yeah, I could do that for egotistical or conceited reasons. But if I post a selfie because I have a higher purpose and I need to reach people, ego can help me do that. Otherwise, like, it's like creative people, musicians, artists. Like, why do they call it a starving artist, right? Now we're bringing in the feminine and the masculine essence within you. So the feminine within you, which is creative, is going to create this beautiful piece of art. But the masculine part of you is the doer. It's the one that's going to go out there and get it done and sell it, and maybe even create a gallery for you. But if you don't have a healthy dose or balance of those two, again, the starving artist, you're always going to be creating, never really doing. So the ego is where it comes in and says, listen, you have a higher purpose, you have a mission in this world. There's elements in this society that are that can help you do that. Social media, podcast, speaking, whatever, getting in front of people. The ego will help you do that. A healthy dose of ego will help you do that.
Thinking about your opening statement where you discuss perception. 11 years ago in 2009, I posted a photo online, and it's a funny photo because it's one of me and I'm in Las Vegas and I'm taking a photo with Carrot Top, the very famous, really silly comedian. Mm-hmm. And he's a very, even to this day, who he's done so little in public pop culture in the last decade or so, but everybody knows who he is just because of the way he looks. You know, Carrot Top is a thing, right? So I posted a picture of myself standing next to Carrot Top. Now, that could easily be received by any number of people looking at it as, oh, he's having fun. Oh, he wants us to see how he looks. Oh, he wants us to see that he's with celebrities. And it's going to be viewed that way, in its own way judged. And I'm certainly guilty of it too. If I see someone post a photo, it's often run through the gauntlet of my own judgment. Oh, why are they doing this? Oh, I know why they're doing this. Let's clearly they wanted us to think this, whatever. But at the time, what a lot of people don't realize is that that photo, when I took it, I had just been diagnosed with a very serious illness and I had lost so much weight due to my illness that the clothes I was wearing were literally falling off me and my hand is in my pocket because I'm holding up my pants inside the pocket with one hand. Mm. I'm holding them up so my clothes aren't falling off of me. Nobody knows that, and nobody's going to know that when they see this photo, a photo of me with a celebrity. They're going to think it's a selfie. They're going to think it's me stunning or whatever. They don't realize it's a metric for one of the emotionally and physically most difficult moments of my life. And so
interesting.
That is the tie into perception, that it's not just our ego that pushes us to do the things we do, but it's also our ego that makes us see what others are doing too.
Very true. And it reminds me of a story, and it's really just like a teaching story. As a husband and wife, they have breakfast every morning in this little nook. This nook has a window that looks at the neighbor's backyard. Every morning, I mean, they're older. They have a ritual. They have breakfast at the same time. They probably have the same breakfast every morning. And across the street, the neighbor, or next to them, she hangs the laundry to dry at the same time, pretty much weekly. So every week, the wife sees the neighbor hanging her laundry, and she always makes the same comment. That lady, she must not know how to do laundry. Her sheets and her laundry is just always dirty. Next week, same ritual, same lady putting the laundry. The wife says the same comment. And this goes on for a few weeks, that the laundry is dirty. She must not know how to do her laundry. One week, now we have a different story. The wife says, huh, look at that. She must have finally learned how to do the laundry. Her sheets are clean. Notice that the husband never said anything. He's just sitting there. This time the husband says, no, dear, that's not true. I just happened to clean our window.
Wow.
It wasn't even the sheets that were dirty. It was your own lens. So really, there's scientific evidence or theory that says that we're living in a holographic world. Like, all I'm doing is interpreting the light that's there in front of me. So what am I really seeing? I'm constantly projecting myself. So to your example of that picture, their interpretation or the perception of the person looking at that picture is literally going to be dictated by their own subjective reality. Because what's objectivity? There's scientific theory that says that there's no such thing as objectivity. That is always going to be guided and rooted by your subjectivity, by your own perception, by your own experience, by your own association. So if I have a negative association, or I have some kind of limit or wound about someone taking pictures and posting them with famous people, I'm only going to judge it by that. I'm not going to see any other possible scenario. So therefore, you're going to have different interpretations. I don't know if you have siblings. But if you take a family of four, mom, dad, daughter, son, if you ask each of those members of the family, you can have four different stories about their life, how their life is. Four different interpretations, same household.
Absolutely. It's funny that I actually, my brain jumped to this thing I often think about regarding subjectivity, and even on a broader level from interpersonal relationships, is think of a color, the color pink. I love this example. So the color pink, to an entire generation of people, you know, our fathers, a more masculine, a less understanding and open-minded mm-hmm. generation of people in general, they see the color pink as this feminine, almost offensive color, something that if a male wears it, it's subject to ridicule, and it's an implication of a lifestyle choice and things mm-hmm. like that. And then you scale that back and you think, this is an opinion, and it's motivation to react to the way that our cones and rods in our eyes see the light reflected in this world.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way that the light hits our eyes on That's certain it. Shades, and that invokes anger, confusion,
mm-hmm.
any number of things. At its base level, that is absurd. It's absurd. And yet it's a part of our society, right? So you think about how misunderstood and or almost silly a lot of the motivations for the way that we treat others becomes.
Completely. But going with that example, whoever's looking at that color pink, right? Particularly the older generations, that's what they were taught. I mean, going back to the ego being an operating system where this programs, right? Like if I go into your mind and I look at any area of your life, relationships, money, career, friendships, parenting, whatever, you can break it down into so many different areas, right? If we compartmentalize our life to areas, there's going to be a filing cabinet, and I'm going to pull that out, and there's going to be a blueprint in there full of beliefs, full of views, that you cannot see anything outside of that. So if you think about it, whose interpretation are you living by? Because there's some statistics out there that say, what is an adult? Right? An adult, based on my experience and my research and what I've learned, is that an adult is a wounded child trapped in a grown-up body pretending to be an adult. And so they say 50%, so you're 34, right? 50% of the 34-year-old you are today, at the level of beliefs and how you view the world and your opinions, all that was concluded by the time you were 4 years old. So 50% of who you are today and how you think is based on what a 4-year-old interpreted. And children are great observers, but they're horrible interpreters. So you could be living your life as a 34-year-old based on an observation and an interpretation that's completely erroneous. And if you never take the time to reflect, to get into conflict, to be willing to listen to what someone else is bringing up to you that challenges your view or your belief or your opinion, man, you'll be stuck for the rest of your life. So to say you have a strong ego is actually backwards. That's a weak ego that you can't be willing. I know it's difficult. By no means am I implying that listening to someone else's difference in opinion is sure. easy, because it's really not. I mean,
of course.
Science has proven that it's an existential threat to listen to someone's opposing view. But nonetheless, if you never open yourself up to that, if you never get into a relationship, friendship or casual or romantic, if you never have a disagreement, man, you'll never know if, man, are you heading the right way or not? Is there something that could potentially change or it could be better? Or how do you know that your stance is actually true and strong?
Well, not only that, but think about, try to place yourself in the mind of a 4-year-old. What is a parent that won't let you, the 4-year-old, eat as many popsicles as you want for dinner. Bad.
Mm-hmm.
Mean.
I don't like you.
Unfair.
Right.
But at the same time, saving you, keeping you alive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... I'm almost trying to process the idea that so much of what we consist of our opinions and our thoughts was created at such a young age, because it's scary to think about having to navigate this big, big world without trying to break free of that.
Yeah. And it's you're right. Trying to process that, because you have created an identity on things that probably are not even yours. Beliefs and ideas that are not even yours. Someone just passed them down to you. And going back to episode 1, stepping away from the religion that you were given as a child and testing something else or challenging that. If you never challenge those things, if you never challenge your views, your beliefs, how do you know they're even true?
There's something to be said about safety. Isn't that safety, comfort, aren't those the things that we, as these advanced versions of the cave people that we evolved from, were always searching for?
Comfort and safety.
Comfort and safety. Walls. Walls protect us.
Well, you know, I'm sure you've heard of the quote, you know, in the garden of comfort and safety, nothing grows.
So I guess my immediate question becomes, how does someone just choose to be brave? How do you choose to be brave enough to step up to this scary situation and take it head on?
Well, you could say that showing up or being willing to show up into these difficult situations in life is probably step 1, right? And there's a quote out there, like, because one of the things that we're going to share in this podcast is a talk that I did at Celebration Circle last Sunday, challenging the idea that showing up is enough. Like the quote says that 90% of success in life is just showing up. But I challenge that, because, like, as you're hearing the talk, one example is if you, Nick, invite me to a volunteer event to go volunteer with you and I show up, but I don't lift a finger, is it really enough? Now, you could say that the courage, and going back to bravery, the bravery or me building up the courage and the bravery to show up, because maybe, I don't know, I've never done a volunteer event before, can feel like a 90% struggle and effort. But really, once I'm there, I got to do more.
You have to climb the mountain to show up, only to be at the base of the next mountain, which is to do that work.
There you go. And so we want to hear from you, the listeners. What do you have to say about this?
I don't think that that's all it takes. There's so many more people with 90%. I mean, to me, it's like 90% is what you put into it after you show up. Like, it doesn't take that much to show up. Physically, you get out of bed, you get ready, and you get there. But what do you have to bring to the table when you're there? What type of actions are you going to bring? What type of ideas? What type of things? So there's so much more than just showing up. To sum it up, I don't really agree with that completely, because there's so many people who just show up and who are just living just in through life. Like, they're not, you know, making anything of it. They're not making anything better, or showing up in, you know, church, or showing up to the meeting with nothing to say, or, you know, not actively being present. So I don't think that showing up is is enough by itself. You have to do a whole bunch more.
90% of your success is just showing up. That is true when it comes to actually just showing up to the actual task at hand, the business at hand, because the reality is everything before that is all preparation. You're prepared for this, whether it's a meeting, whether it's your job, whether it's a day you don't even want to be there. You have already prepared yourself to grow and be successful at what you're doing. I believe there is some truth to that, because anything we do, we're going to have prepared for it before, whether it's a business or whether it's a sport or an activity that we're doing. We're preparing beforehand to really make it amazing and do the best that we can.
Thank you guys again for listening to this episode of Bridge Theory. If you want to find more episodes, please find us at Bridge Theory on Instagram and other hosting sites. My name is Nick Mary. You can find me at Mary Kid, MeryKid.
And I'm Angel Santiago, and you can find me on Instagram at Life Coach Angel or on Facebook at www.facebook.com/ANGSANTI. And of course, you can always YouTube or search the hashtag Life Coach Angel.
And don't forget that there are more episodes of Bridge Theory coming. We look forward to listening to what you have to say as well. And before we close the episode with a piece of the talk Angel gave at the Celebration Circle, a closing statement on Angel's thoughts and the conversation we had today. Ego is a heavy burden that we hold as people. It is something that we have to navigate the waters with while holding the strap on our backs. It is poison if you take too much of it. It's medicine if you take the right amount. And no one said that life was going to be easy, but life is wonderful if you do the work. Thank you for listening. And here's Angel.
So there's a quote that says that, and I'll read it verbatim, 90% of success is just showing up. The rest is the 10%. But I'm tempted to challenge that. And I'll ask you a few questions and just sort of listen to the questions and just feel what comes up for you. It's really 90% just showing up. Then does owning a guitar make me a guitarist? Does registering for college make me give me a degree? Does showing up to a volunteer event automatically make me a volunteer? Does pregnancy make the mother? Does getting into a relationship make the couple? Does showing up at your spiritual center or church of your choice make you spiritual? In each of those questions, if I own the guitar, in order to be considered a guitarist, I have to take lessons, I have to practice, I have to play it. Then I'll be a guitarist. Owning the guitar doesn't make me a guitarist. If I show up to a volunteer event, but I don't pick up anything or don't lend a hand, am I really volunteering? Just the mere fact that I get into a relationship with someone doesn't make us a couple. It's the work that we have to do, the sacrifices, the choices, the intention, the energy and effort that we put into that relationship that makes a couple. If pregnancy makes you the mom, what about the moms that adopt? I know moms that did give birth to the children that don't show up as a mother. Same thing here. If I go to church, if I come here on Sundays, does that automatically make me a spiritual person? Are you familiar with Brené Brown? You've heard of Brené Brown? In one of her talks, she talks about having an attitude of gratitude. Right? She talks about having an attitude of gratitude. And she also cautions the danger with that. Because she says, I love yoga. And I wear the yoga pants and I wear the yoga clothes. But I don't go do yoga. She says, you could say I have a yoga attitude. I don't practice yoga. So I challenge the same thing here. If I show up here on Sundays, and I wear the right clothes, and I stand the right way, and I speak the right talk, and I wear the right jewelry, and I look the part, but yet, in my day-to-day,
My life hasn't changed. I'm not overcoming some kind of fear. I'm not letting go of some kind of habit that's a limiting habit that's self-destructive or self-sabotaging habit. My life's not improving. I'm still getting into the same kind of problems. I'm still in the same struggle. Like, even if it's 1% progress, because a lot of times we want to talk about success, it's like, I'm not there yet, right? But are you making progress towards there? Even if it's 1% progress, if you make 1% progress in a month, that's 30 days, that's 30% progress. So we want to measure success like this huge thing, that if I'm not there yet, then I haven't succeeded yet. But everything we're doing here, everything you're learning, if you go on Wednesdays, if you meditate on a daily basis, that stuff should be making changes in your life. Like, I'm reading a book called, I just recently got it, it's called Transformational Politics. And I saw it because it was, the topic came up in a show that I was watching. I mean, has any of you seen The Messiah on Netflix? Yeah? It was okay. But what really stood out to me was the term transformational politics. I was like, what is transformational politics? And I'm reading through this book, and it talks about many different themes that show up in transformational politics. And it brings it to the personal. And it talks about what positive and peaceful changes are you making in your life? It talks about, are you looking at your personal life, your home life, your spiritual life, your community? Like, what are you doing there? And it reminded me of what just happened in Puerto Rico, where they asked the governor of Puerto Rico to resign or to leave, to get out of office. And that was a great thing for the people of Puerto Rico because they needed to make that change. But then I was taking a shower after I was reading the chapter, and I was like, well, then I wonder how many people that decision impacted their personal life. Yes, we got rid of the governor, now we have another one. But did your personal life change? Did the dynamic within your home change? Did your parenting get better? Is your dynamic with your husband or your wife or your girlfriend or your partner any better? Did you impact your job? Are you becoming a better employee or a better business owner somehow, some way? Right? What are we doing within ourselves? Otherwise, what is all this for? Right? Why are we doing this? And it's great to make big change like that. But at the end of the day, the change that needs to happen within you. That little by little, I'm becoming a little bit more patient, a little bit more kind, a little bit more caring, a little bit more loving, a little bit more connected, a little bit more understanding. That whatever, like, who was here for House Talk last week? Anybody was here for? I mean, that's it. I mean, if you've seen Hal before, he doesn't make a new talk. It's the same talk every time, right? But we forget, right? It's the same talk everything with a new story, but the same talk. And it's that important. It's that important. This is really easy to want to like work out here. But it's not as easy to do it in here. I'm also reading a book on an Audible. You're familiar with Audible? On listening. It's one of the things that I probably want the most. I want to be listened to. Who doesn't want to be listened to? So I thought to myself, well, based on Hal's talk, if that's something that I really want, and maybe I should learn something about it. Maybe I'm doing something wrong about it. Maybe I'm not listening properly. And so I'm learning about it. And I want to share a little bit of the research that was found in that talk, in that book. There's and I don't know the school, I'm paraphrasing all of this, I'm just going to give you the highlights. But there's a debate program in the school, and the teacher shares that the number one fear of his students in the debate program is that if I open up to hear another person's point of view, to truly understand the other person's point of view, that I lose my stance on mine. I'll lose my firmness on my stand, on my position, on my belief, on my view. That if I truly open up and understand your point of view, your opposing view, that I'll lose sight of what's important to me. I'll take it further. They did an fMRI scan. They plugged them into this device and they had them listen to an opposing view. The brain lit up in the same way as if they were about to get attacked by a bear. That's how scary it is to listen to an opposing view. I was sharing this with my supervisor at work, and she said, I read that in a different book, and it said that if I listen to you, to your view, to your belief, to your stance, and I don't say anything back to disagree or say, no, well, this is my stance, this is my point of view, it's almost an existential threat to you. Like you cease to exist in yourself. It's an existential threat. So all these things are tied together. So I read further along in the book that I'm reading now, Transformational Politics, and it says that what we should be looking for more in our lives is an opponent. Someone who can disagree with us. If you truly want to grow. That's who you need to be listening to. Someone who disagrees with you. And going back to the audible, on listening. We talk about politics, right? And I don't remember the gentleman's name, but he was a POW. He passed away just recently. Older gentleman. McCain, when he was on his deathbed, I guess you could say, he said that what we need more is committee leadership, right? Kind of like what we did here in Circle, a shared leadership, where you can look at different sides on the table and then get to a compromise or a happy medium, right? The healthy balance. And then going back to, say, in the same book, he talks about Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs only hired people that would disagree with him. That as much as he pushed for his ideas and technology, he wanted someone to push twice as hard against him. And yet, in our lives, we look for people who agree with us. Because then that somehow validates who we are. That if you don't have my experience on A, B, or C, then your experience is not valid. It can't be true, because you didn't have my experience. But if you didn't take that path that I took, then your path is no good. When in reality, what I'm learning from both of these books is that when someone else shows you a different path, and it shows you an opposing view, that's where your view and your belief gets put to the test. Is that really true for you? Or did you just find a different way and now you have more integration? Mm. Now you have more path. Now you can choose a different way. Your way is still equally valid. Same with religion. Like, who says that this is the way? And so that brings me to my next point. I run into Christian on one of my runs around the neighborhood, and I'm walking, and he's walking. I see this guy. Like, I mean, it was kind of cold that day. It wasn't that cold.
I'm not from here. I'm from warm weather.
This guy's like with this, like a scully cap and a bandana and a puffy jacket. And I mean, I'm like, I'm running. I'm like, man, that guy's cold. And then I starts to walk, and he goes like this. He extends his hand, and I look through the. All I could see was his nose. I couldn't see anything else. I'm like, oh, it's Christian. So I shook his hand, and we hugged, and And it was interesting that we saw each other because I didn't think we were going to see each other to talk about today. Right? And he asked me a question, which I really appreciate. He says, what are you going to offer on Sunday? Because he says, what I'm offering is what I do, music, and, you know, well, what are you going to be offering? And I like that because I'm not saying that what I'm saying is the truth. I'm just offering a perspective, a path, something else I can open up and say, oh, hey, I didn't think about that before. It doesn't nullify what you already know. It doesn't disbelieve what you already believe. It's, everything that you bring is still true. Just want to offer up something to consider. And when we show up here, or when you show up anywhere, number one, what are you showing up for? What is your intention? And then number two, showing up isn't enough. I would say that showing up is 10%. Now that 10% can feel like 90%. Because there may be things that you're showing up in life that to build the courage, to build up that strength to say, I'm going to go do that, takes a lot. But then once you get there, then what? If you come in here on Sundays, and we listen to Hal, we listen to the speakers, we listen to the people that lead meditation, we listen to the poem, what is it all for? Is it a habit because we were raised to go to church on Sunday? It's nice to hear. Interesting perspectives. But then what? Where do you take this home and apply it and make real changes in your life? Even if it's just 1% today, 1% tomorrow. And the last thing I'll leave you with is, when I was learning meditation, one of my teachers said to me, Angel, if meditation stays in the cushion, you're wasting your time. And you might as well not meditate. And he said, you need to bring it into your everyday life. When you're doing the dishes, you need to be meditating. It's like, yeah, right. I don't like doing dishes, so that's not happening. Like, I don't see how that could be, possible. My dishes at the time, this was like 9 years ago, my dishes would stack up. I just didn't like it. I could use the word hate here. I just hated it. And I didn't understand them at the time. I was like, okay, whatever. I'm sure it'll make sense one day. And one day it did. I remember doing the dishes, and I had no thought, no judgment, no opinion about it. I was just there in the moment. Not thinking I hate this, not thinking wishing to be somewhere else. I was just doing the dishes. And now I actually enjoy it. I really do. I enjoy it. So, showing up isn't enough. Once you show up, and I pat yourself on the back, because that's huge. But now what? What are you going to do with that? Thank you very much.